Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Millennials are moving to Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, St. Paul, even Fargo, North Dakota. Turn around. It's cold. Come back. Oakland, California, and Spring Valley, Nevada. But nowhere are millennials moving faster than to Charlotte. This is important because the number of millennials is growing, and while other cities may be attracting lots of these 18 to 34-year-olds, Charlotte has been able to retain more of them. And that is why last spring, a group of UNC Charlotte architecture students, led by Deb Ryan, a professor of architecture and urban design, developed the Millennial Plan for Charlotte. In this city, in which we regularly develop plans, this one caught the attention of the mayor and the city council because it focused on how to build a city that millennials want to live in. Obviously, we've kind of done that, but why not improve upon it? So this hour, we find out what's in this plan, what went into designing it, and what it will mean for Charlotteans of all ages if much of it is adopted. Professor Ryan is with us in our studio. She's the founder and former director of the Charlotte Community Design Studio and now director of the Master of Urban Design Program at UNC Charlotte. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you. Monica Carney Holmes is planning coordinator for the City of Charlotte's Urban Design Center for Planning, Design, and Development. I think I got all that right.
Yes, you did.
Welcome. And Alexandra Wagner is one of the architecture students who worked on a UNC Charlotte portion of the Millennial Plan. You've graduated since that plan came out, I'm told, and you're working for an architecture firm in South End, is right? Is that right?
I have graduated. I have a salary and everything.
Wow. what firm do you work for?
I work at Overcash Demet Architects in South End.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to start with you because this is the Millennial Plan, and I just gave all these statistics about millennials liking Charlotte and coming here and staying here. What is it about Charlotte that millennials find so attractive?
I think it's just that Charlotte is just comfortable for people. It's not crazy expensive like a larger city like New York or Chicago, but it's also kind of got that somewhat small town vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also, there's a lot of different communities in Charlotte that you can kind of nestle into, you know, that suit a lot of different demographics, which we kind of, you know, try to get into in the Millennial Plan. But, you know, it's just a lot of different things that people sort of find comfortable.
But I mentioned these other cities that are in this top 10 list of millennials' favorite cities, among them Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, St. Paul. Some of these are big cities. Some of these are not so big cities. Now, Fargo, North Dakota can't be a very big city. Never been there, but it can't be that big. And you just mentioned that Charlotte is kind of a place where millennials, you can get your hands around it. You can feel like it's your egg. So what do we have that Fargo doesn't have or that San Francisco, for crying out loud, doesn't have?
I think it's appealing in Charlotte to be here because Charlotte is very much kind of finding itself. And so I think people specifically in my generation find it attractive that they can sort of have a say in the way it changes. I think that's something that millennials really sort of strive for is sort of being creative voices and kind of affecting the place that they live in.
So we're still moldable clay as opposed to set in concrete.
Essentially, yes.
2015 data provided by the U.S. Census Bureau revealed that Charlotte was the number one city in the country. That's where that figure came from for attracting millennials. 71,240 millennials moved here. 60,000 moved away. What? That's a net migration gain of more than 10,000 newcomers in that age group that year in 2015. That was 4 years ago. Any way of knowing how those numbers may have changed over the last 4 years?
You know, we haven't tracked those. I bet we could find that out for you, but I couldn't tell you right now.
Because the census, we talked about this 10 years ago, and the census was going. The census goes on all the time. It's not just every 10 years. They're doing these figures and statistics all the time. So why are they coming? I understand if you're here, you understand what Charlotte has to offer, and you get this feeling that, as you just said, Alexander, that you can mold. You have to take part in molding the future of the city. But if you don't live here and you don't know that, why Charlotte?
Why
are they coming?
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting question, and I don't know if we're actually the right people to ask about that. I think that, you know, I thought as Alex was answering that question that what was sort of hidden in, hidden underneath what she said was that many of the students, when we were doing the plan, saw the potential of Charlotte much more so than the attractiveness of it. And so while I think many millennials are attracted to the city, I think they also want to change it, as she said, to a different sort of city.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about that because this plan would change it dramatically. So we have some have pointed, some people moving here have pointed to the affordability of the city, lower cost of living, job opportunities. Would you agree with that, or are there other reasons that are off that list?
I mean, I think that there is a millennial culture here too that not every city has. I mean, you walk on the rail trail on a Saturday and you look around, and a lot of other cities wish they had that type of environment, that vibrancy, that active living. You know, you can't forget the brewery culture. People like what they see. And so I think that there are a number of millennials who move here. They meet friends. They meet mates. They like it. They see a lot of people like themselves.
Yeah.
And that's attractive. So they want to stay.
What is millennial culture? What is it? Because as I read through this plan and as I hear you talking, Monica, many times I have said to myself, well, I drive through an area or go to a brewery or something like that. I think, you know, gosh, I wish that this had been here when I was 20 or 25. And it wasn't in any place except a great big city. And I thought, gee, if this were only here. So is it really particular to millennials, or is it just a young person's desire for things?
So that's sort of interesting that you bring that up, because initially when we set out to sort of do all the research and kind of come up with these ideas that we presented in the plan, most of everything was geared towards millennials specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of as we gathered our data and had conversations with people at events that we were doing and things like that, we found that we were getting input from all different demographics, ranging from young to old. So what's attractive for millennials is also attractive, I think, for the wider, you know, population.
It's, as I read through your plan, it just strikes me as a new way, a fresh way of looking at things and opening the doors to possibilities that are right in front of us that perhaps older people don't see.
Exactly. It's just a way to start the conversation.
We already know this, Monica, a dearth of affordable housing. And I had a figure here that the average rent in the city was $11.50 a month. This morning in the newspaper, it's reported that the median rent in Charlotte is now $1,455
wow.
a month.
Wow.
So I don't know where that $11.50 figure came from or how old right. that is, but how affordable is that for young people who are just starting out? That's a lot of money, $1,455 a month for an apartment.
Right. I mean, affordable is a completely, it's relative to everybody's individual situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that's a lot of money. To someone else, that's a lot of money. To someone, a third person, it might be within their range. So I think that, I mean, that's as an issue for the city to tackle. It's something I know that is very close to heart, and people are really trying to work on tackling that issue.
Because when we talk about affordable housing, normally we're talking about workforce housing for
right.
people who really can't afford $1,455.
Yes. Right, that is way outside the range.
But are young people, and are young people just starting out, getting their first jobs, making enough money? Clearly they are, because these apartments are going up everywhere.
Right.
Are you guys stretched thin to make the rent and buy groceries and go out to the breweries, et cetera?
I would say people have to find creative ways to sort of spend their money, I guess. I know a large chunk of your paycheck does go towards rent. And then, you know, then you go to the grocery store and spend $100 and you're like, what did I buy? I have three things.
That's like, exactly
you know?
Right.
So it's definitely just, it's doable,
okay.
especially also a lot of these apartments are located in areas that have a lot going on.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, that reduces gas because then you can just start walking to things.
I'm glad to hear you say you go to the grocery store and spend $100 and you bought three things, because I often have that thought. And I thought, well, I'm just an old person.
Yeah,
so
it's like, well, I don't
me.
Even have dinner tonight. Like, so do you think about that?
So we've done a lot of shows on a lot of different plans over the years on this program of centering around Charlotte's plans for its future. I've never seen a book like this. Out of all these plans, you guys put together this book. Beautiful. It's gorgeous. Is this for sale?
Yes, it is.
It should be.
but let's pat Alex on the back. She is the book designer.
Are you really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's terrific.
Thank you so much.
It's a great looking book, and it's a companion book to the 2018 Millennial Plan. In the foreword, you mentioned, since I was going to talk to you about this, Deb, but if Alexandra put together the book, should I talk to her about it?
Well, she certainly did the design work on it, yeah.
Okay, so in the foreword, you mentioned that in the previous year, the city was immersed in rewriting its zoning ordinances and creating this thing that we call the Unified Development Ordinance, which was proving difficult to do, and I'm not sure they're still doing it. Are they? Is Marcus Jones taking a fresh look at how that is coming together?
It's the timing of it. That's a whole nother show. Yep, there, yes. The timing of it is a little different. Okay. We are focused on a comprehensive plan right now,
okay.
The 2040 plan. We're also focused on our transit-oriented development district.
So because this was going on at the time this project started, this unified development ordinance, which has been proved difficult to do and which people really couldn't understand, and we did hours on it and I didn't understand it, you encouraged your fifth-year architecture students, they're grad students, to develop a comprehensive plan of their own. How did it morph, Deb, into the Millennial Plan? Is it just because millennials were designing it?
Well, it's a great question. At the time, I was chair of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Commission as well as being their professor. And so there were some of us on Planning Commission that were getting rather frustrated at the speed or lack of speed of the plan moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I thought, as I often do, well, let's see what my students could do, and let's have them take a shot at it. But we work on a semester-to-semester calendar, and so there's really only so much we can accomplish it's really a 13, 14-week span. And so we have to move pretty quickly to produce anything.
So you came up with a plan and this great book and statistics beyond this book in 13 weeks.
Yes.
Is that your only class?
Oh, no. No.
So that's fast.
I'm glad you brought that up. It was not around the class.
But that's fast.
Yeah.
I mean, we did take the summer to actually finish up the graphics and everything and some of the editing. Mm-hmm. But yes, in terms of the class of students, we had 13 weeks to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also wanted to do a lot of civic engagement, so that took a lot of time too.
So, Monica, in a city that has bookshelves full of plans that have been developed, some implemented, some not, some waiting to be implemented, why do we need another one to sit on the shelf? Or to be implemented, for that matter?
Well, I think the Millennial Plan came at a really great time for where we were in our forecast and looking at what we were doing at the time. It was able to kind of do some things that we can't do necessarily as quickly, as easily inside the walls of the government center. So I think that the ideas that came from the Millennial Plan and giving the fact that it was a 13 to 14 week project. There were three or four of us who work in the planning department that were a part of the project. We were able to kind of see how ideas worked and were tested in real time. And then we can use this for our work going forward as a way to get new ideas, incorporate that into, again, some of the plans that are just going to, like, we can't do them in 13 weeks, we can't do them in 14 weeks, but we can see what bubbles to the top of this and what was most effective, and then figure out how to fold it into our process.
And if I understood this correctly, this captured the attention and the interest of Charlotte City Council and of Mayor Vi Lyles. Is that because we have a pretty young council right now?
I was going to say, if you look at the demographics of our council, I think that the timing was perfect for it. You look around the dais and you see a lot of young city council members. So I think that that helped make this more relevant.
Monica Carney Holmes is a planning coordinator with the Urban Design Center for the City of Charlotte. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Millennial Plan 2018 for Charlotte, which was put together by a group of students from UNC Charlotte's Architecture Department under the direction of Deb Ryan, who's a professor there and also a former the head of the Planning Commission, I believe.
Yes.
In Charlotte. She is with us, along with Alexandra Wagner, one of the students who participated in this and also who designed the companion book for the plan, which is a terrific book. Nice little coffee table book for Charlotte. And also Monica Carney Holmes, planning coordinator for the city of Charlotte in the Urban Design Center. You wanted to follow up, Deb, on something that Monica was just talking about before the break, that this plan was not done in isolation. You had the cooperation of professionals from the city who
We absolutely did. And it's very important to me in terms of the work that my students do that it is never done in isolation, that it's always done as part of the community. And so the planning staff has always been very helpful in coming into my classes and working with my students. And on this project, they did that. Monica, along with some of her other colleagues, were instrumental. They came in probably every couple weeks to check on what we were doing and give us input on that. But also, Larkin Eggleston was on our advisory committee. And Braxton attended a few of the meetings, too. So we also had city council buy-in early on. So that was also important so the students could really sink their teeth into it.
So as we go through, we're going to go through this plan in a second and talk about some of the ideas that you've come up with and some of the recommendations. And as we go through them, you may have some comments. Listeners may have some comments of their own or some suggestions of their own. And you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks. Search for us on Facebook. You can even watch us on Facebook Live this morning. You know this is a millennial plan when there is a hashtag attached to it. And the hashtag for this is ShapeCLT. Did you come up with this?
We all kind of sort of heard it as a group during a city planning meeting that we were sitting in on early on. And, you know, we just kind of ran with it. We just couldn't come up with anything better.
What does it mean, ShapeCLT? This is an opportunity to, or we want you to help, or what is it? What is it an invitation
to? So kind of, I guess, like what I was saying earlier, just why Charlotte's attractive. It's sort of, you know, still kind of in this phase where we can start changing and sort of affect things around us. So we really want to shape the city, essentially. By just kind of engaging with, you know, our community and sort of allowing our input to be heard.
Well, you also designed graphics for this and a branding graphics. And the graphic above the hashtag on the cover of your book is Charlotte's crown, but you're exploding it. You're blowing
splatter.
It up.
It's a bit of a paint splatter. So the original version of the logo that's present in all of our media and also in the book as well is a very colorful exploding crown. I've got a little visual aid right here.
Ah, okay.
You know? The colors represent Charlotte's diversity, and the crown sort of represents Charlotte's foundation. But the paint splatter kind of represents sort of...
Jackson Pollock. I'm just kidding.
That's one interpretation.
Perhaps creativity.
Yes. So it represents.
Yes.
It represents our sort of want to sort of build on Charlotte's foundation by using input from all sources.
And we had a little bit of a logo competition in the class, and actually Robert Brooks designed this one, a former student. In case he's listening, I want to make sure he gets credit for it.
He's listening. I know he is.
I can't think of the word I want to use. It's it begins with an A. Oh, well, it's gone. But it's kind of you're challenging people with that. You're saying what you've said in the book that in the past, the city of Charlotte has sometimes been slow to adapt or change. That logo tells me that you're not afraid to throw things at the wall and see what sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to this whole thing was basically a 13-week experiment to see what we could do, how fast we could do it, how many people we could reach. And, you know, this book is the culmination of that, and the logo, I think, really represents it.
So the next sentence, following the one I just read, in the past, the city of Charlotte has sometimes been slow to adapt to change. The next sentence reads, that will not work for millennials. We are an impatient bunch. Now, you posit that this impatience could be because you've lived during a time of rapid technological change and advances, and technology certainly has sped a lot of things up. But isn't impatience a hallmark of youth? Isn't this something that will fade as you get older?
It might, but for now, we're impatient.
So we should use the energy that impatience comes from or provides and act on it, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
is the city equipped to deal with this?
I will say, so I this is a almost 4-year perspective, but I will say that the city has rapidly changed since I've been there to be much more equipped to do things rapidly. We, in planning, have changed course with some of our larger initiatives. We've been moving much quicker. We've established a placemaking program that basically the entire aim of the program is to do things quickly, you know, get in there, do it tactfully.
Well, when the new council came in, they said the time for talk is over. The time for action is now. This kind of feeds into that, right?
And staff believes that. I honestly, what I see on the ground every day is quick action, quick thinking, and let's get things done.
Yeah. Because I think the city, and understandably so, has always been very risk averse, and planning even more so. And because the horizon for planning is 10, 20, 50 years, and so we get very impatient because of that. And so one of the things we like to think about in education is failing fast. And so we wanted to fail fast on this plan. We wanted to throw the ideas out there and say, are they sticking or are people getting really upset by them? And we could do that, you know, as students, as an academic institution, much more so than the city could. Because the city, you know, has a lot, you know, they have to worry about...
budgets.
They have to worry about budgets, but they also just have to worry about how they deliver messages. You know, because people, if the city says something, then people can get really concerned about it.
Right.
But if we say something, it's kind of like, well, bunch of students, or, yeah, bunch of students.
The other thing that strikes me about this is that the city has long been touting its desire to attract millennials to Charlotte. Charlotte Center City Partners, the Chamber of Commerce, the city itself have long said we need to attract these people. How do we do it? What can we put in place that will make them come here and then make them want to stay here? We've done a lot of shows on this. So, Monica, why? Why is it so important that this city attract and keep millennials?
Well, let's be honest. I mean, they're the future.
And you're a millennial, aren't you?
I'm a cusper. I'm going to claim a cusper. I think I could go either way. It depends on what demographic study you read.
So why is it so important?
Well, I mean, I think that we want people to invest. We want people to love Charlotte, fall in love with it early in life, invest, and stay. Mm-hmm. I think that you just look at the size of that demographic and the millennial kind of portion, and we want people to invest here with their careers, their families, what comes next. So I think as a city, we have to look forward and figure out what makes people move here the first time, but also fall in love with it and decide to stay for their rest of their days.
So you and your fellow student, Robert Brooks Alexander, presented this plan to the mayor and council.
We did.
What was that experience like?
Nerve-wracking, for one thing. But it was, overall, it was really cool. He and I were very nervous about the presentation beforehand, so we practiced for, like, the whole weekend prior. But once it was over, it was really nice. You know, everyone seemed to receive it very well. We had a lot of interesting feedback. A lot of good questions were asked sort of about, you know, specific ideas, also sort of complimenting the fact that we looked at Charlotte's history in the plan as well, which was sort of, you know, a major piece of data that we took forward with us. So overall, it was very positive.
I would think, correct me if I'm wrong, that everybody who worked on this, aside from Deb, is a millennial.
Yes.
So,
with the exception of some of the advisory committee.
Okay. So as those of you who are millennials were working on this, obviously you know what it's like to be a millennial. You know what you like about Charlotte, what you don't like about Charlotte, what you'd like to see change. Did anything emerge from the research that you did and the people that you talked to and those who offered you ideas that changed some of those perceptions that you have of this city as millennials?
I wouldn't say it changed our perspective. I would say it sort of revealed kind of what we all were sort of talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think overall, sort of the first thing that comes to my mind is sort of this desire for flexible space and sort of just, you know, flexible business and things like that, kind of engaging with more one-on-one interactions and also in terms of like sharing economy. So like an Uber, Airbnb type of feel where you are, you know, taking a service from an individual as opposed to necessarily a corporation. So I think it's mostly about the need for sort of flexibility is what really came about.
So in this companion book, Millennial Plan 2018, A Vision for Charlotte, which this organization, this group of students put together, you point out that millennials believe in bottom-up change, where one person with a good idea can make a difference. And that, to me, at least from what I've experienced, seems to fly in the face of government tradition. How can any city, including Charlotte, accommodate that philosophy, a bottom-up philosophy? Doesn't that lead to anarchy? Don't you have to have top-down leadership?
Oh, you know, I think the city of Charlotte has always done a terrific job reaching out to the community. And certainly, if somebody in the community has a good idea, I've seen time and time again where the city will embrace it and try to run with it. And especially so, like Monica said, in the last 4 years. I absolutely think that, and it's what it's what Alex is really talking about. There's the opportunity here to really have a difference and have your voice heard.
Some of your desire, I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, Deb, some of your desire to do this project, have your students work on this project, stemmed from the Opportunity Task Force report, because you were part of that and trying to make sense out of that and what to do about that. It spelled out a lot of challenges for Charlotte, which the city is trying to work on. Does your plan address speeding up progress on working on those challenges?
I think what we really wanted to do with the plan was sort of shake things up. And that was probably the most important thing. Again, I think within that 14-week semester, it's tough to get to some of those harder, more difficult issues to solve. And so I'm not so sure that we touched on that quite as well as we could have.
I will say, though, I was reading back through it, and some of the interesting things, one of the core six items was radically inclusive.
Yes.
And I will say that I think that as a core principle is something that we as the planning department have really taken heart to, especially with our comp plan, Charlotte Future 2040. We're doing the entire plan with an equity lens. And I think that that has helped kind of put that in the forefront. You know, just saying we're going to be radically inclusive up front. What does that mean? How do we look at city planning with equity at the forefront? And what does that look like for policy decisions?
Yeah, and that's a really good point because, you know, in the past, you know, planning has really been done with meetings and sort of the typical people show up for them. And over the last few years, planning has really begun to reach out to less traditional populations. And millennials, by the way, are one of those less traditional populations because they don't show up at public meetings. And so a lot of what we did was try to bring those voices forward.
Right. So let me throw some paint splatter on this conversation from Karen on Facebook, who says, "My millennials fled the city and are not coming back. Sports, breweries, finance, not their thing." All of that's in your plan. So tell me, how do you explain that? Not all millennials are cut from the same cloth. That's a fact, because they're individual human beings. But we do seem to have this concentration in this plan and others on sports and breweries and financial opportunities and finance at the finance sector of our economy.
I think one of the interesting thing about millennials is their diversity and how they embrace diversity. Yeah. And so I can certainly see how some millennials would find a different city, perhaps a more inviting place to live.
So Karen on Facebook, I encourage you to write back and tell us why your millennials left and what they're searching for and if and where they found it. Because maybe that can be incorporated into this plan.
I think one of the things millennials really search out is authenticity.
Yeah.
And that's in the plan.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes in charts, it's a little bit harder to find. And so you actually have to make the effort.
That kind of leads to the question about history, because authenticity, as I understand it from reading through your book, has to deal with not taking everything and bulldozing it.
Right.
and encouraging things that have grown organically to flourish, as opposed to artificially planting something somewhere and saying, this is our sector, whatever the sector may be. You researched Charlotte's history for a millennial plan. Why?
Well, because in order to sort of inform the decisions, you know, we make in the future, we want to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past or see what was successful in the past and then take that forward.
And you also ask questions like, I wish Charlotte had more.
Mm-hmm.
I wish Charlotte still had.
Mm-hmm.
I love Charlotte because, and ask people to end those questions, end those sentences. What did you learn?
Well, we learned that people really miss the Bobcats. I remember that was really...
Are you serious?
That was frequent. That was
Are
frequent.
Are you serious? They missed the Bobcats?
Yeah, that was frequent.
Holy moly.
I'm just the messenger. you know, people really wanted... less construction was also something I recall seeing a lot of, which I agree. But... so it was a lot of this desire for authenticity, just sort of places that are our own, essentially, just sort of, you know, more local, I guess.
You also looked at what other cities were doing to attract and keep millennials. And given that we seem to be doing pretty well at that, given that we're the number one city in the country for this, did we have a lot to learn? What are some of those other cities doing better than we are?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, scroll through the whole thing in my head. We looked at a ton of different precedents. We actually acknowledged them at the very end of the book, say, thanks for your ideas. We tended to look at more walkable places. I remember Amsterdam was one that we looked at because of the bicycle culture.
In Holland?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was very appealing, especially because millennials are very interested in healthy living and also sort of mixed use and kind of, you know, having easy accessibility to these places. And, you know, you can kind of see that sort of reflected in Charlotte kind of, you know, starting to with the Lime bikes and the scooters that you see everyone riding around on.
Right.
So it's definitely, you know, some accessibility and also just places with some character. Another one that sticks out in my mind is the Wynwood Art District in Miami, which is essentially a collection of murals done on some old buildings. Some of them are being upfitted. I know that it's still kind of growing, so it's not completely, you know, flourished as of yet, but it's getting there. And so we were thinking, you know, perhaps what could Charlotte benefit from that? Sort of a little bit more artistic character on its walls.
Here are some words we're going to spend the last segment of this program talking about: connected, lively, radically inclusive, urgently innovative, ecocentric, healthy, shared. You've already talked about those two things, and unique. Are we any or all of those things? Where do we rank? How do they fit into this plan? We're going to find out when we come back in a moment with Alexandra Wagner, one of the architecture students at UNC Charlotte who helped design this plan, Monica Carney Holmes from the city of Charlotte, and Deb Ryan, who prodded and poked her students to come up with this plan at UNC Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Millennial 2018 plan. You know we're talking to millennials because phones are going off throughout the program. the Millennial 2018 plan is a project that originated at UNC Charlotte School of Architecture with Deb Ryan. Alexandra Wagner is one of the students who worked on it, who designed the companion book, which is coffee table quality and will help. It's not like these other big publications that I've seen for plans. You can actually read this and understand what you're talking about. And Monica Carney Holmes is with us from the city of Charlotte. She's planning coordinator for the Urban Design Center there. All of the descriptions that I just mentioned going into the break: connected, lively, radically inclusive, urgently innovative, ecocentric, healthy, shared, and unique. All of them are part of your vision for what would make this city attractive to millennials in the future. Eight concepts that you centered this plan around. So let's talk about them. What do you mean by a connected city?
So we mean connected in the sense of physical and digital interaction. So the way people engage with one another, we want to facilitate those interactions to sort of, you know, add to the culture of the city, economic benefit, et cetera.
So in this digital generation, in this digital world in which we live, and you point out that millennials are the first digital, truly digital generation, I think, maybe the younger generation. But you've always had your faces in screens and keyboards, and the internet was always part of your life. You're encouraging public spaces for connectivity.
Absolutely.
That's analog.
Yeah.
So where are you suggesting these public spaces be? What kinds of public spaces are you talking about? Are they breweries or are they parks? Are they, is it the downtown square where people might join in for a festival, or is it the Mint Museum? What are these spaces?
I think you explained it all pretty well with those examples. So it's essentially those spaces that you just mentioned, but we also, some of our more specific design ideas in the book and in the cards that you're holding, they address sort of reprogramming, you know, spaces that are now vacant or just being unused.
Are the spaces missing today, or are we simply missing opportunities to use them?
Opportunity is, I think, the key word there.
How would you use them?
So sort of, I guess, the running theme with this entire project is, as Deb said earlier, failing fast. So just using things that are temporary to sort of encourage those interactions. This could be, you know, sort of a community organization that just quickly sets up some tables and holds an event for any number of things. It could be, you know, retail-based. It could be just conversational. It could just be, you know, idea session, just people hanging out.
But don't we have coffee shops and breweries on every corner? Aren't those the opportunities that millennials want to connect in
they
the real world?
Money. Yeah. They require money.
Oh, I don't know. I've been to coffee shops where people sit there all day and don't buy even a cup of coffee. So you're talking about, well, if it's cold outside right now, so you're looking for indoor spaces at the moment. So where name one. Do we have one?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one that's indoor.
What do you think of Amelie's?
Oh, yeah.
You got to buy stuff, don't you?
Yeah, we always hang out there.
The atrium's free.
Yeah.
All right. So, but digital interaction is also just below public spaces in this plan. But you say that cities need to understand the underlying structure of social media and digital communication in order to properly grow a connected city. That comes from your report. What does that mean? That's the one sentence I'm not sure I understand.
So I feel like that could be interpreted as just sort of the city engaging in social media and sort of connecting with its citizens, basically, not just necessarily posting a blog on their website that no one's going to check.
You're also calling for free public Wi-Fi. This would be citywide, countywide.
That'd be nice.
In a world where you can go to a coffee shop and get on Wi-Fi, you can go to the library and get on a computer. In a world that's soon to be 5G and everybody carries around their smartphones, do we need free public Wi-Fi?
It would, yeah, I think so, because you can still go over your data, and then you have to pay for that.
Okay, all right. So do we have a shot at that?
Oh, that is a huge issue. I have no idea in any realm about free public Wi-Fi throughout the city. It's an infrastructure issue.
Would you be fought on that by the phone companies and the internet service provider companies? If you're going to give it away for free, you're going to cut into their profits.
I'm sure.
So how do you solve that issue?
Well,
I think it's the concept it's important.
It's the concept. Just throw it out there. And there are places that do have that. So it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. Your plan calls for us to be radically inclusive. Define that.
So this is an interesting characteristic because during our brainstorming session, we were sort of, you know, we wanted to define what a millennial city was and what those characteristics were that actually, you know, contributed to a millennial's idea of what a city should be. Mm-hmm. And diversity is a concept that kept coming up, but we didn't really like the word diversity purely because it didn't seem active. We were looking for words that kind of, you know, sort of were different than what had been used in previous plans.
Charlotte is said to have a tradition, unlike other southern cities, of being welcoming. As long as you bring something to the table and as long as you're willing to work, you're welcome to be part of the process. This seems to fit in with that. If that's a true statement about Charlotte, it seems to fit in with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so radical inclusion, essentially. We liked the word inclusion because it implied that it not just acknowledged diversity, it also sort of made an effort to sort of embrace it. Mm-hmm. So essentially that's what radical inclusion is.
You want multilingual street signs.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We have a lot of different diverse communities that are bilingual in the city, and it would be helpful, I think, for certain.
How expensive is that, Monica?
I don't know the cost of our street signs, but I can say that we did do a project last year called Can Do Signs, where we did multilingual signs at the corner of Trade and Tryon.
You're also calling for international districts, and certainly that spotlights the various cultures that we have here in Charlotte, Asian cultures, Hispanic cultures, Japanese culture, etc. Mm-hmm. But does it bring together people or does it separate them, putting them in districts? having the Asian district or the Hispanic district or whatever district it may be?
Well, I think it's it could be read that way, but I think it's more about sort of highlighting those differences and sort of, you know, bringing them to the forefront, because there's a lot of Charlottesians don't know about the communities that are, you know, in their backyard even. So it's kind of just more about bringing attention to those cultures and then sort of engaging with them meaningfully.
And it's fundamentally about choice, too. Mm-hmm. Just because you had an international district doesn't mean that you have to live in that, but rather brings a level of authenticity and mm-hmm. celebrates that culture.
Well, that was my next question. Authenticity. Maintain authenticity is something you're stressing in this report. What does that mean?
Just stop tearing things down. And making new things. It's sort of just acknowledging what Charlotte has and building off that, as opposed to wiping the slate clean every few years and just mm-hmm. sort of, we need to create something new to catch up with this city, or, you know, this place is doing this, so we need to, you know, double down on what we're doing here and get rid of what we've already done.
And I also think that there is the issue of neighborhood diversity. We have great neighborhoods in Charlotte, mm-hmm. and we've really begun to celebrate them. And the hope is that they maintain their individuality rather than sort of meld into like one big city idea.
How do you do that? Is that planning or zoning, rather? Excuse me.
Sure it is.
I mean, I think it's obviously zoning plays into it. That's how buildings get built.
Because
but there's
the city,
a lot of other things that can play into it,
The city's allowing this to happen through its cooperation with developers and zoning. You look at Elizabeth, and these 5-6-story apartment buildings are going up along Elizabeth Avenue and out for 7th Street. Is that Elizabeth Avenue? I think it is. I don't know what it is. But anyway, these apartments are going up.
Yeah.
And it's a neighborhood of bungalows from the 1930s and 20s and 40s. In South End, you're seeing the authenticity of South End being just completely wiped off the map by these 5- and 6-story brick apartment buildings. Aren't we encouraging that? Aren't we allowing that to happen?
I think the city of Charlotte, I'm a native Charlottean, so I'm going to go ahead and say it, is that we're at a constant struggle of growth and progress versus kind of the established neighborhoods. And right. I think, honestly, for a lot of our history, growth and progress has kind of won the day. So how we deal with that tension and how we deal with the pressures of growth and development are currently one of our biggest issues, and I think that's not going to stop. So
yeah, and I think one of the issues of authenticity is not necessarily the height of the building. There are a lot of other things that play into it. For instance,
yeah, but you're just character of a neighborhood matters.
A character of a neighborhood. For instance, if you were to go into, let's say, Third Ward, you know, the traditional authentic sort of houses in Third Ward have front porches on them.
Right.
And yet what we see are houses that are being built with garages on the front.
Right.
That's probably not authentic, even though the buildings are the same size. And so I think, you know, there's a whole host of issues that we want to look at in terms of authenticity that aren't just about size.
All right, let's go quickly through these things. We're running out of time here. Ecocentric. You're calling for Charlotte to be ecocentric. That means a city that cares for the well-being of the environment and the people who live in it. Where do we stand right now?
Well, I think we're making some steps towards it. But I think it could be taken more into account with the way that Charlotte moves forward.
And I think the point of having that in the plan is that to always acknowledge a city is a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But the egocentric thing is one of the values of the millennials. And so they're just putting their hand up and saying, hey, this really matters to
us. You're also calling for shared spaces. If I understand this correctly, space for creative talent. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard for artists and other people who don't make a lot of money to afford a place to do their work.
Right.
Don't we have entrepreneurs who are providing shared spaces? We have all these shared office spaces. Are we not providing that?
I think it's more about increasing the volume of it and also, again, going back to the connected characteristic, the accessibility to these spaces, sort of really celebrating community ideas and encouraging people to start up their own business and sort of bring to the table what, you know, their ideas are.
So who pays for these shared spaces?
Well, funding was not majorly on our minds during this process.
In cities that have these shared spaces mm-hmm. that millennials find attractive, who pays for them?
Usually it's usually a city group or something that
well, there are all sorts of arrangements for that. I mean, sometimes it's private, sometimes it's public-private partnerships, and sometimes the city pays for it.
And we have some of those going.
Yeah, we do.
We just want more of them.
Yes.
The plan calls for a lively city, a place with lots of people on the streets and with entertainment streets. What would that look or be like?
Well, it would essentially be when you go out in uptown at night, you see like a lot of people on the streets. You see people playing music. There's sort of bars that are spilling out with people, clubs, etc. So it's really just you walk outside and you're sort of invigorated by the activity that's going on. And we don't feel that Charlotte is always like that.
And why is that? Is that because the people who own the bars or the there are not enough things to do? Is it a zoning problem? Is it a lack of encouragement by city officials? What is it?
You know, I think sometimes
because we're not New Orleans.
No, no. But if we think about uptown, an awful lot of the very cool activity is at the Epicenter, and that's an inward-facing project. So if you would imagine taking all the activity in the Epicenter and turning it back out to the street, I mean, imagine what the city would be like.
We do that a lot in Charlotte. We put everything away from the street. Why do we do that?
Well, I think it's some of it has been a pattern of history with with zoning and the rules that we've had. I think we're moving towards more of form standards where we don't care as much about what uses are in the building. What we really care about is how does it engage the street? What does the public realm look like? What does the sidewalk look like?
Yeah,
how wide is the sidewalk? Is there activity?
Yeah, Charlotte's not unique in catering more towards people in cars.
Right.
I mean, most American cities did that. And like many American cities, they're finally realizing that people on the street, whether they're walking or biking or scooting around, really requires a different kind of attention and development.
So that feeds into the next suggestion. You were calling for us to be urgently innovative, for a sense of urgency when faced with innovation, a city that is forward-thinking and willing to experiment. Is that in our DNA?
I don't think so necessarily, but I feel like it's definitely an urge that people have individually, and I feel like we need to tap into that as a city. So when we were talking about innovation early on, there was always this discussion of time that came about because there's a lot of good ideas, but there's almost a lack of willingness to, you know, really, you know, go forward with it quickly. So we want to see change fast, and if it fails... Okay.
Yeah, and the city has a lot of placemaking initiatives underway right now that really address that.
Yeah.
And one of the places that they're working on are these greenways, and you want us to be more healthy. Greenways and bike lanes, they fall into that category. But it seems to me that people are gravitating toward using scooters. Scooters aren't healthy. You want us to be healthy. Scooters are a rapid means of mechanical transportation as opposed to walking or taking a bicycle. So how does that figure into your healthy plan?
I feel like the scooters sort of allow, I guess, maybe a little bit more of an ease of transportation early in the morning when you're trying to get to work and you're not trying to sweat through your clothes, especially in the summer.
So they get the cars off the street.
So we have 30, maybe 45 seconds left. Brandon on Facebook writes, the biggest thing that hasn't been talked about that has been uninviting to a large group of millennials, it's the fact that our art scene has diminished tremendously. We have lost music venues, artists to places like Asheville, Greenville, Raleigh, Durham. Is that in the plan? Is that addressed in the plan? Did we just miss it?
I believe we address it in sort of small ways. We sort of talk about, you know, maintaining the character, authenticity.
Well, we asked for a music master plan, too,
yes,
and
do.
A lighting master plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And Fred emails, Charlotte will become radically inclusive when millennials are willing to work alongside older people. Huh. Aren't you?
I work along with older people every day.
Isn't it pretty good? It irks, but it irks you, doesn't it?
No.
I don't know where he got that. Because you're calling for an atmosphere in which citizens, all citizens, wake up in the engaging city with a desire to take part. That means working together.
Absolutely.
What happens to this plan now? I have 5 seconds. What happens to it?
Hopefully something great comes out of it.
All right. We will stay tuned. Yeah. Alexandra Wagner, Monica Carney Holmes, Deb Ryan, thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.